And welcome back. There was a certain inevitability in Bobby McFerrin's immersing himself in the world of music. His father, Robert McFerrin, was a renowned history-making operatic baritone. But Bobby took his musical heritage to a whole new level. His major hit, Don't Worry, Be Happy, is something he is happy for, but doesn't want it necessarily to define him. Bobby McFerrin will be performing at the Sheldon on April 25th. It's a homecoming of sorts.
I think the last time I was there, I sang with my dad and my sister and my mom.
That was, I think, about 25 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so, something like that.
St. Louis does have a special place, I gather, in your heart, and certainly your family's heart.
Well, I spent a little bit of time there growing up as a kid, but my father's relatives, you know, my cousins and uncles and aunts all lived in St. Louis, so I'd get there every once in a while.
Well, as I say, we're looking forward to seeing you here. What sort of a show do you plan for the Sheldon?
Well, I have a band. It's got a sort of a folky, jazzy, bluegrass kind of tinge to it, you know, flavor to it. And I'm basically singing songs about the spirit, spirituality, mostly Christian-based, based on some of the Negro spirituals that my father sang when I was a kid growing up.
Is that why the title of the show, as I understand it, and I probably am mispronouncing it, spiritual or spiritual?
Spiritual, yeah.
Spiritual.
Take on the word spiritual.
Yeah, I figured as much, but I wasn't sure how to pronounce it.
Yeah, spiritual.
Don't you have an album coming out with the same title?
Yes, it comes out in, about a month from now.
Well, we'll look forward to that as well. All happening at about the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I watch you and I've watched you over the years, it seems to me that you see music as more than just notes and a melody. See it and hear it, actually. What do you see and hear in music that causes you to go off in these uncharted directions that you take?
Well, I guess I could call myself a song catcher. I like catching songs. I like being in the moment. I like exploring music. I like being a student of music. I like learning from other musicians. I love going into other cultures. And I've actually had opportunities to go to some music schools in other countries and learn some of the, you know, the modes and the scales and some of the rhythms and the feels of other musicians, because I'm very, very curious about how we play music together and how we come together through music.
Do you have a favorite? I mean, of all these places you've been and all the music you've heard, is there a type that really resonates in particular with you?
Well, I could say all of them because they do in many ways. But there have been some experiences that stand out. For example, once I was in Ireland, I was in a town called Limerick, and they were having a reception for me. And so, you know, I was expected to go in and have my picture taken and shake hands with 1,000 people and all that kind of stuff. And as soon as I stepped in the door, I noticed that there was a small Irish band tucked away in the corner playing, you know, genuine Irish jigs. And I danced my way over to the band and never left that spot the entire evening, even though I was expected to sort of schmooze and circulate throughout the crowd. I didn't do any of that. I just went and hung out with the band and with my mouth open and my eyes wide open, my heart open to this music, and just loved it. Had a great, great time, you know, talking to the musicians afterwards and sort of getting an idea of what they were doing and how they were playing and how they were feeling about the music they were playing and stuff like that.
Well, I think one of the key questions has to be, did you leave Limerick with any good limericks?
I didn't, and I wish I could remember this one limerick that this man said, you know, at the end of the concert, because what I like to do usually at the end, instead of doing an encore, is have the house lights come up all the way, because I've been singing in a dark room and I haven't seen anyone, so I like to see the people and just have a conversation with them. You know, they can ask me questions about my life and what I do, and at the very end of this one question and answer period, this guy stood up and quoted this lyric that he had written about me, and I just thought it was great. I wish I had a copy of it, but he just kind of vanished off into the crowd.
You know, you speak about performing and not seeing the audience. Some of the performances that I've seen, you seem to draw upon the audience nonetheless, and you certainly have a certain degree of interaction with them. How much do you draw upon the audience for what you do?
Well, a lot. To me, that's the best part of the performance, when I open up the floodgates and just say, you know, come on down, let's hang out, and let's have a musical feast, a musical party. I love it when the audience sings, when we all sing together and we do things together. I invite individuals to come up and sing duets. You know, I invite dancers to come up and dance. You know, it's an opportunity for people to get to know me and themselves and, you know, other people.
So a lot of what you do is extemporaneous.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's all extemporaneous. You know, when I walk out on stage, I really don't have any plans. When I'm doing solo concerts in particular, I have no plans at all. I just walk out, sit down in the chair, and just start singing. And anything that comes to mind, whether it's a song that everyone knows, which, you know, could be drawn from any genre, you know, classical or folk or country or rhythm and blues, jazz, whatever. It's just I decide on the moment what I'm going to do. This concert at the Sheldon on the 20th, you said the 25th of May?
Mm-hmm. April.
April. It's with a band. And so I'm singing songs, but then we still mix it up. I still like to mix it up. You know, I'll start singing a piece, and the band will kind of figure out where I'm going, and they'll start to accompany me. And it's fun. It's just a lot of fun.
It certainly looks like it. I watched on YouTube yesterday. I watched a performance you did of Ave Maria with a group. Uh-huh. I'm not sure where it was, but it was just outstanding. And your ability to use your voice as an instrument, which, of course, the voice is, I guess most people would agree to that. When did all of that start?
Well, back when I was 27, when I decided that I wanted to be a singer, the idea of being on stage alone was really fascinating to me. And I spent a lot of time sort of grappling with the idea of it, because I hadn't seen anyone do that, and the idea of a singer being on stage without a band was kind of scary, you know. But I was fascinated by it. I was challenged by it, so I decided to give it a try, and I worked on my technique for about 6 years before I did my first solo concert. So I practiced a lot. I had a tape recorder with me wherever I went, sang into it at every opportunity. I purposely kept myself from purchasing albums that featured singers, because I didn't want to cop somebody else's style or technique. I wanted to make sure that my voice was genuine, my technique was mine, you know, things like that. That's the hardest thing for any artist, I think, is to find out who they are, you know, what their genuine abilities and talents and gifts are. And because so many young people today think that they have to sound like, you know, someone else in order to be successful, you know. But the real success stories are the ones when people take the time to discover who they are deep in their heart, you know, because that's going to give you longevity. And I think that's partly why I've been able to be successful as a musician, because I've been true to myself.
You obviously are a lover of music and a student of it. What do you think of the popular music world today? What impressions do you have of it?
I keep asking myself questions like, well, what would Cole Porter think about this piece? You know, he would probably say things like, well, where's the melody, or where's the development, or, you know, things like that. And I ask myself the same thing lots of times. You know, we've become a culture of groove without any kind of development. So when I write my songs, I'm thinking, where can I take this song? Because I also, it's very difficult to break the habit of just getting into a groove, particularly in some cultures, you know, like the African cultures, the African musicians. Their grooves are really, really deep, you know, and I like those grooves. But when I'm writing a song that's got lyrics and words and it's telling a story, you know, and this is hard, I think, for anyone, even myself, is developing a piece so that it takes you on a journey. You know, people like Paul McCartney and the Beatles, you know, Lennon and McCartney, the stuff that they wrote. It really takes you, it's like they're telling you a story, and it really takes you places. And you're very curious about where they're going to take you in their pieces. But lots of times, young people create pieces that have no mystery to it, and you kind of know right away, you kind of know where you are right away. There's really no journey into the song, if you know what I mean. So that would be my number one criticism.
Well, you know, I think you and I are pretty much on the same page when it comes to that. I mean, I think some of the things written by Cole Porter and Rodgers and Hammerstein were just beautiful pieces of almost literature, the way they put it all together. Do you consider yourself a Bobby McFerrin in any sense an outlier in the music world? That is just kind of off the fringes of it, as opposed to being
probably.
Yeah,
you're probably correct about that. That's probably true.
You've been described as one who defies all expectations, and I'm just wondering what kind of expectations you have of yourself or your place on yourself.
Well, as I get older and I start listening to my body, I know that one of the things that, you know, I want to slow down when it comes to touring, and I want to write more. That's one thing that I know that I want to do, because I was a composition student in college, and, you know, in the early days, my early days, that is, as a musician, I fantasized about writing movie scores and TV scores and arranging music for different artists and things like that. So I was constantly writing music. And so I think I'd like to go back and explore that, because I really haven't done it. I've written some music. I've written some pieces. But I haven't really explored myself as a songwriter. So I'm kind of eager to go there now. You know, that's the territory I want to explore.
Well, that's something we're certainly going to look forward to when you have the time to do that. What about the role of your father in your musical life? You know, I could see in some cases where someone who might have a famous father might be a little bit intimidated by that, particularly if they're going to go into the same general field.
Well, I might have been, without knowing it, be intimidated by my dad, because I was 27 when I decided to sing. And, you know, people say, well, why did it take you so long? And my answer is, well, I really don't know. It was probably it took me that long because, you know, God was waiting for the perfect moment to reveal to me that I was a singer after all, you know. I don't know. I learned a lot from him. He was certainly probably the biggest influence as a musician. He was a great musician. He studied hard. I watched him rehearse. I watched him study music. He was great on stage. He had a great personality, great charisma on stage. So I probably got all that stuff from him.
And for those who don't know it, he was the voice of Porgy in the film Porgy and Bess, the role played by Sidney Poitier.
That's correct. And he was also the first African-American to sign a contract with the Metropolitan Opera in New York City in 1955, I believe it was.
Boy, that was a big step, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, indeed. Oh, yeah.
You know, I was surprised to learn in reading about you that Bill Cosby was an early mentor of yours, and perhaps really critical in terms of your career.
Well, exposure-wise, yes, he was. I was working with John Hendricks and his family at a club called Sweet Basil in New York, March of 1980. When he walked in, he heard me sing, you know, and do some a cappella stuff. And he asked for my phone number, and he said he's going to call me. And I thought, yeah, sure, right. Yeah, Bill Cosby's going to call me. But he did. He called about 2 or 3 days later and said, I'm hosting the Playboy Jazz Festival at the Hollywood Bowl, and I'd like you to make an appearance. And this was after they had already announced the lineup, you know, and I guess there was no room left. But they found room for me because Bill was the host, and, you know, he was the guy. So they found 20 minutes that I could go and sing. And I had a quartet, I think, at the time, trio or quartet, and played those 20 minutes, and that was that. You know, and then years later, I did the theme for the Cosby Show. I think it was 1987, the third season.
Not a bad guy to have as a mentor, needless to say.
No, not a bad guy at all.
I have a sense, you mentioned the quartet, I have a sense that you might prefer performing alone.
Well, you have incredible freedom when you're by yourself. But then again, the musicians that I generally am attracted to are the people who are willing to just hang with me and kind of figure out where I'm going to go, and they're not intimidated or put off or scared, you know. Because I love to improvise. But solo voice has sort of been the backbone of my career.
How would you describe yourself? As a singer? Is it that simple?
I'm a song catcher.
A song catcher, as you said early on, a song catcher. Well, one of the first songs that really put you in world attention was Don't Worry, Be Happy, obviously. And to a lot of people, that is how they know you, and that defines you. Is that okay with you, that's the way they look at Bobby McFerrin?
No, that's not okay. And I wouldn't be okay if anyone define me as a classical musician or a jazz musician or a pop musician, because that's very limiting. So, any kind of classification always troubled me.
Well, it's been such a great pleasure talking to you. I can't wait to be listening to you on the 25th of April at the Sheldon Theater. Now, the Sheldon is really a very special place too, isn't it?
It is indeed. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it myself.
I think most people will agree that the acoustics at the Sheldon are beyond compare, really. And I guess for a performer like yourself, for a song catcher like yourself, let me say, that has to be extremely important.
Of course it is. Yeah, because your instrument is not only the instrument that you play. It's not only my voice, but it's the environment, it's the acoustics, it's the sound that I'm hearing the sound that comes back to me when I sing a note. All those things are very, very important. So some environments, it's kind of hard to sing because you have to push a little bit harder to be heard, And then there are some halls that you walk in and it's like you can do anything because the acoustics help you, The acoustics either help you or they hurt you, one or the other.
Well, again, we look forward to seeing you on April 25th, Bobby McFerrin. Thank you so much for spending a few moments with us and continued success.
You're welcome. Thanks. Take care.
You too.
Don't worry. Be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Now there is this song I wrote. I hope you learned it note for note like good little children. Don't worry. Be happy. Listen to what I say. In your life, expect some trouble. But when you worry, you make it double. Don't worry. Be happy. Be happy now.
Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about key astronomical discoveries of the last 50 years and about significant St. Louis ties to space exploration. This comes as the James S. McDonald Planetarium celebrates its 50th anniversary. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.
Don't worry, don't do it. Be happy. Put a smile on your face. Don't bring everybody down like this. Don't worry. It will soon pass, whatever it is. Don't worry, be happy. I'm not worried.